Hello, welcome to 251, and this is one of our special episodes, and we're going to be looking at the 68th Grammy Awards, and we're going to be looking at the jazz category winners. My name's Nick Tomlin.
My name's Simon Whiteside, and this is 251.
So the 68th Grammy Awards were held February the 1st, 2026, and of course the Grammys, they're not just limited to jazz, they award
everything.
Everything, basically.
Recorded.
Yes. All recorded music, really. But we're obviously more interested in the jazz categories.
There are quite a few of them, aren't there?
There are quite a few, yeah. Yeah, there are quite a few jazz categories. Shall I just read through, how do you want to do this? Shall I just read through the winners and then we talk about them, or should we go through them?
Give a list of the winners now, and then we'll talk about
each one. Yeah, okay. So for Best Instrumental Jazz Album, the winner was Sullivan Fortner, the pianist, for his trio album Southern Nights. The Best Vocal Jazz Album was Portrait by Samara Joy. The Best Large Ensemble Jazz Album was Without Further Ado, Volume 1 by Christian McBride and Big Band. The Best Latin Jazz Album was Gonzalo Rubalcaba, a tribute to Benny Moray and Nat King Cole. The Best Jazz Performance was Chick Corea for Windows Live. And the Best Alternative Jazz Album was Nate Smith for his album Live Action. And there were other kind of adjacent, I mean, they even do things like Best Sleeve Notes, don't they, and stuff, you know, but I thought we'd maybe just focus on the most.
Well, obvious. Should we start with the large ensemble?
Yeah, we can do, yeah. Yeah.
And one of the reasons I wanted to start with that is that the Royal Academy Big Band.
Yes, that's right. I was going to mention that and I forgot to, but yes, you're right, yes.
Was nominated, and that was for the Kenny Wheeler linked to a new book.
Mm. Was it Some Days Are Better Than Others or something? Is the name of the album?
Yeah, and yeah. I can't remember what the book's called, but it's a reference to Everybody's Song But My Own. But it's not that.
Yeah, and that's, I know Nick Smart has done a huge amount of work. And in fact, he co-authored the book, didn't
he? He's co-authored the book.
And he's done a huge amount of work at the Royal Academy to promote Kenny Wheeler's music and his legacy and stuff. So,
which is interesting, because Kenny Wheeler was associated with the Guildhall, wasn't he? More, in a way.
Yeah,
because he used to come in and do workshops there quite a lot.
Yes,
Anyway, so congratulations to them for getting on the list and getting to go to the ceremony sort of thing. Yeah. So the Royal Academy Jazz Course has, I think Nick has really lifted it, actually. Mm. Mm. And also, it's there at the moment. They're going through their little festival that they have every year.
Yeah, yeah.
People like Willem Simcott go in and workshop stuff, and other great players who have come through the academy or
associated with.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really good. So Christian McBride's album, it relates back to. Do you remember that Christmas album we talked about, Christian McBride's?
Yes.
It's kind of those people again.
It's the same. It's the usual suspects.
It's a lot of the same singers. And it is very much a kind of smorgasbord of singers, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously featuring singers, isn't it? I mean, in fact, I think every track does it.
I think every track. Yeah. There might be one instrumental track. Mm. Maybe not. But there are people. They're good. You know, there's a good variety. Mm. And Samara Joy is one of them, who also won for her album. But Jose Jones.
Yeah.
Diane Reeves. Various other people, and all quite different in their style.
Mm. And it's quite a mixture. I mean, it's you know, he's very, very much kind of mixing. So some are more kind of straight ahead, kind of big band, 50s, 60s style arrangements. But then he does, you know, he also does a more of a kind of 70s funk. So you get the sense that he's got this band, and depending on who he's working with, they can essentially play anything, I think, this band, really. You know?
Yeah, I think the only one that is really funky was Back in Love Again. The other thing that I noticed was that there are some quite good, in all of these albums, there were some quite good interpretations of pop songs or, you know, songs that aren't traditionally jazz standards, as well as old folks and moaning and things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose Murder by Numbers is the, because that has Sting and I think Andy Summers is also in it, isn't he?
So, it is, yeah.
It's almost a Police reunion.
Yeah.
Probably the nearest they're ever actually going to get to a reunion. But yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, it is quite, I can't remember, was the original Swung?
I think it is, yeah. I think the original is. It has got a kind of swing, like a shuffly.
Shuffle.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it's quite interesting that you have all these different, Cold Chicken Sweet might be instrumental, actually, the last thing. But At Least You'll Love Me Tomorrow by Diane Reeves. Mm. That was really classy and very different to the, was it Glen Campbell, someone like that, wasn't it? Who made it famous. But that kind of almost like a maiden voyage sort of approach to it, wasn't it?
It was a good rearrangement, yeah.
And also on Moaning, though, I liked the, there were a few sort of quotes to the past, like that. I think the trombone soloist opens with as his opening phrase, and then at some point they sort of go into blues march.
And they're sort of referencing different
blues march, which was that
there's a Messengers
who played baritone as well, alto player Lou Donaldson. Isn't his album called Blues March? But maybe he played in.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. I think the original version was on Moaning, wasn't it? The Art Blakey album, I think.
Oh, I see what you mean. But but they go into a feel of Blues March.
Oh, I see. Right, okay.
Which I think is a Lou Donaldson
track.
Right,
okay.
Which is that sort of.
Yeah.
And then someone quotes.
Yeah.
From that, anyway. So there's sort of jazz history lesson going on.
The thing I couldn't really figure out was who actually did the arrangements. Did Christian Bride does he arrange for the band?
No, I don't know that he does, actually. But I know on the Christmas album, there were several people I think that one of the trombone players has done quite a few. And on that Christmas album, they were listed. They don't seem to be as listed on this.
No, that's the problem with, I think with the streaming, it's very hard sometimes to find this information of actually who did the arrangements, you know, which is a shame, but...
But I think they're from within the band.
Yeah, right, okay.
But not necessarily Christian McBride, although he might do some.
He may do some,
as well.
Yeah.
I thought the arranging was good. You know, the way the trumpets played, but the way the trumpets were recorded, I didn't think gave them full force, which was quite weird. I don't know why that was done that way.
Yeah, I don't know how it was recorded or...
I mean, I found when we move on to the next album, the Samara Joy, seven people sounded sometimes bigger than that whole big band.
Yes, that's true. Yes, yeah. But maybe that was a deliberate. Maybe that was a deliberate.
Yeah,
production.
I mean, I could hear the trumpet players were playing normally, but they just seemed to be a bit distant compared to the saxes and trombones. But hey, who am I to? We won a Grammy, so what do I know? Should we go on to Samara Joy?
Yeah. Okay.
I'd just like to say from the start, wow, absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Arranging, singing, concepts, recorded at Van Gelder Studios.
Yes, that's right, all in one room. So it was kind of old-style recording where the whole band was set up with mics. And
the drums work, I think the drums work brilliantly like that because they're not right in your face, left to right on the sound spectrum.
No.
They're just where they should be in a jazz album for me, but her singing is unbelievable
and she's brilliant.
Her range of both texture and tone and literal range, she can sing in her boots up to stratospheric, all with control, amazing. As a sort of I do sing a bit. I think that's about as far as you can go. But just to I am a trained, I studied opera and lieder at college as my first instrument. So I know about technique to that extent. Don't get to use it much while singing jazz, to be honest. But she does actually use classical technique and non-classical technique.
Yeah.
So she'd whisper into a microphone as easily as almost be a blues shouter, you know. So some of the brassy tones she gets out of full-fledged and huge lungs, because she sings some very, very long phrases.
Yeah, no, she's an incredible singer. Yeah, and I thought the whole album worked really well. I think it was her kind of touring band, isn't it? This is her regular band that she works with and tours with, and I think they just literally went into the studio and recorded
after the tour.
After they toured, so again, they're obviously you can hear the band are very tight. And I mean, I didn't actually know any of the players. I didn't know.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? They are quite well, not unknown players, but just
under the radar.
Not ones we know yet.
No, 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 maybe that's it. Maybe they're very young.
I mean, she's not that old, is she?
No.
But clearly, a very capable band, and clearly, you know, I think she has worked with her band to create stuff.
Mm.
And there's some lovely ensemble stuff where she's singing part with the ensemble, you know, doubling lead lines.
I like the fact, because I think sometimes you get it with these albums, a bit like with a Christian McBride one, where very often these albums, they become just a kind of a bit of a guest list of, you know, they invite guests on and they have different lineups, which can be good. But I quite like the fact that it's the same musicians, and it's just really like almost like a live gig with her band, and I think it,
and a seven-piece band that sounds huge. Band,
yes,
it sound, really does sound huge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I thought is it the second tune, Reincarnation of a Lovebird,
where she
sings a cappella
the first sort of
several minutes.
Yes, yeah, no, it's absolutely incredible.
And the band come in, and she's dead in June when. Because doesn't she hold a note and then the band joins her and she's right on it. I don't know whether she's got perfect pitch, but clearly her tuning is amazing, and her ability to, you know, she doesn't put a foot wrong, does she?
No. It's a really, really impressive album. Probably my favourite of all the ones that I listen to, I would say, of the Grammy.
Yeah, I think I would agree. Do you want to move on to the next one? I've got in my list of things I put together, I've got Southern Nights next.
Okay, yep. So,
again, another tune that's been reinterpreted.
Yeah, because I think it was written by Alan Toussaint, wasn't it, I think, originally. Mm. But was it Glenn?
Maybe that was Glenn Campbell.
Glenn Campbell. I think that was Glenn Campbell who recorded a sort of famous version of it. So this is Solomon Faulkner. Yeah, it's kind of funny almost that he's still described as a kind of rising star, but I mean, he's kind of risen now, hasn't he? Kind of in a way. Yeah. I mean, he must be, is he in his early 30s, mid 30s? I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't really know.
He's relatively young, but he's been around, a while, and he's kind of gaining, his reputation is kind of building really as one of the most important kind of young, new kind of crop of young pianists. He sort of came from the Fred Hirsch kind of, I almost think of it as like a kind of a school almost, Fred. Mm. You know, there are the kind of players who kind of studied, like Brad Meldow as well, studied with Fred Hirsch and Solomon Faulkner. And they all kind of have this similar kind of contrapuntal approach to the piano, really, I would say. That's the kind of, you'd have to pick a sort of a distinguishing feature, that's it really. And you can kind of hear it on this album. I mean, this is a trio album. It's recorded at the Village Vanguard with Peter Washington, Marcus Gilmore. So it's a live album. And it's kind of, it's a mixture of standards. Obviously, this Southern Nights is a kind of a pop song. Alan Toussaint, it's New Orleans, really, isn't it? I mean, he's from New Orleans.
Because it starts with that second line style drumming, doesn't it?
Yeah. But he's a phenomenal pianist. I mean, absolutely. Again, talking about just technique in terms of, the way he can, the way he can sort of.
He's got a broad technique.
Yeah,
he can play. I mean, I didn't. You have to give some kudos to the fact that it's a live album.
Mm.
But I mean, for example, I went to hear Gwilym Simcock with the trio with Tim Garland. Mm. I've got the right Garland.
Tim Garland and
Asif Serkis.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a live gig, and I don't think Gwilym put a foot wrong.
No.
There are some feet put wrong in this live recording.
Yeah.
And he is a very good pianist, but I'm a little bit surprised that there wasn't an album that was more accomplished to get that slot. But
I mean, he has recorded studio. I mean, I think it was very much a live. It's meant to be a live document of that night at the Village Vanguard.
Oh no, I get that. But yeah, how many mistakes does Bill Evans make at the Village Vanguard?
Mm. But when you say mistakes, what would you?
Well,
you
I mean sloppy playing and things. It's a minor criticism, but I did wonder when I listened to it whether there were better albums from that, because it's from August 24 to August 25, isn't it? The period to qualify. You know, maybe Brad Maldo's won it too many times. But I think there are better pianists. I'll be brutally honest, but I mean, I'm not one of them, so I can't really can't really make that claim. But but I didn't enjoy that as much as his reputation. I haven't listened to much of his stuff before.
I mean, for me, he's a brilliant solo pianist. I mean, he's brilliant at the sort of contrapuntal improvising, multi-voice kind of improvising. That's his bag, I think. And this kind of trio stuff, I don't think he's such a natural trio pianist, partly because of that, because that style, in a way, is quite...
flexible.
Well, maybe. And also quite busy. You know, it's quite busy and there's a lot going on. Even in his improvisations, he's very often... Yeah. There's more than one voice improvising. You know, and I'm not sure... I think it can work with a trio, but it's... I think sometimes it can be a bit too much, I find, that approach with a trio. I think he's sort of first and foremost a solo pianist, and some of his solo... I mean, I got his last solo album, which was called... what's it called? Solo Game.
Hmm. Well, that may be where he shines more.
Yeah, and that's amazing. The first half is him just literally just playing standards solo, and I think Fred Hirsch produces it, and Fred Hirsch just called out tunes. He made a list of tunes, and then he just called them out, and he just played them.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, I liked him most on the standards that he did play, although he does a kind of... contemporary piano introduction to I Love You, doesn't he? Which is one of the breadths of technique I was talking about. But yeah, I don't think I'll listen to that album again, whereas I will listen to Samara Joy again, and maybe the McBride album. But I don't think I'll listen to Southern Nights again. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's not good. That's a taste. A preference thing. Do you want to talk? I didn't really listen to the Latin album because I thought it was more about Latin.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about
it. Yeah, I mean, I can briefly talk about it. So yeah. Gonzalo Rubalcaba, obviously very established, well-renowned jazz pianist, kind of Cuban, really comes from the Cuban end of, I guess, the jazz, Latin jazz kind of. But he's done all sorts of stuff in his career. So this was a tribute to Benny Moray, who hadn't really heard of before this, to be honest, and Nat King Cole. And kind of looking up Benny Moray, I kind of understand that there's a kind of a connection. Benny Moray was a kind of a very famous Cuban singer from the sort of 50s, 60s,
right.
Tenor. He was a tenor.
Did he play piano? As well, like
actually, that's a good question. I don't know if he actually played piano. I'm not totally sure. I just know him as a singer. He was definitely a sort of star singer from that period. Basically, what he's doing is taking some of his tunes, some of Nat King Cole's tunes, and they kind of do this. So it's a Latin ensemble. They've got saxophone, bass, drums, percussion. And I mean, I was a bit underwhelmed by it. Really, I just thought it was. Because it comes with this big concept thing, and it was basically it just came across as they were just playing a few Nat King Cole tunes in a kind of Latin style, and then this other guy is obviously, and I don't know, I wasn't totally knocked out by it it was good. I mean, it was good. You know, it was obviously really, really accomplished band, all really amazing players, but you know, just and even the choice of like playing things like Unforgettable and the kind of you know, I suppose the songs associated with Nat King Cole's kind of pop sort of career. So I don't know. I just found it a bit odd. I mean, it seemed a little bit like maybe they came up with a concept. Maybe I'm being a bit unfair, but you know, they kind of came up with this concept to hang it on, but it wasn't, I don't know what the concept really adds to it, is what I'm trying to say, really, you know.
I mean, I, with those sorts of things, I kind of get it with live stuff. So I saw another advert for a Boysdale's gig performing Kind of Blue. And I get that because people listen to it. It's the most widely known jazz album, and people are going to go, oh, I know that. And they're going to go along and they're either going to like it or think, oh, that's not like the record or something. Yeah. But I get it as a sort of getting people through the door. But for buying albums, some of these tribute albums I find odd because they're... the one tribute album that I do really like is the Diane Krall Nat King Cole album. Mm. All For You or something it's called, isn't it? And she can sing and play the piano really well. And she does. She has the same setup, no drums.
Yeah.
And I think it's Christian McBride on bass on that, actually. But it is really a tribute. She's singing as maybe, you know, a matter of taste, really, but she's as good a singer and piano player as Nat King Cole in a way. And they don't muck around with stuff too much. But, So, I mean, I guess if you put on your poster, Simon Whiteside rips off George Shearing, you're not going to get so many people turning up. But when you do a tribute band, I think it has to be actually a tribute to...
Yeah, but that's obviously, this is something I've thought about because of this Shearing band, you know, but I've tried to kind of... I've tried to find a balance between doing a proper tribute, trying to kind of really capture what made that band great, the quintet, but then also doing some, you know, originals and some arrangements kind of influenced by, you know, so it's a tricky one, really, because obviously you can get people that just say, oh, you know, this is all just, you know, it's just...
museum jazz or something.
Yeah, 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 museum jazz or whatever.
But I think museum jazz is important, not as pushing the music forward necessarily, but as, you know, you can listen to a George Shearing record and you can enjoy that, but not, you can't hear him live anymore. So if someone is doing what you're doing and trying to do it as well as possible and saying these tunes are really good live, then I think that's an important but the trouble is and also George Shearing's, although he was very popular in his time, he's not necessarily being served now. Whereas you can go to plenty of the music of Coltrane or the music of Miles Davis or the music of Charlie Barker. You know, tributes too come all over the place. And many Ella Fitzgerald and stuff like that. Which very few singers can reach that level when you're talking about someone like Ella Fitzgerald. Anyway,
probably should move on.
The final one was the Nate Smith stuff, and which I think we're going to disagree on because I quite liked it.
Okay,
but I think he's a great drummer, and I try to start with something which is the most obvious to test it on, and I think there's a couple of standards on there, aren't there? Isn't Early Autumn a standard?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I think these sorts of things, you know, I'm more interested in people doing stuff that has improvisation in it over a different beat. As I think that's kind of more authentically jazzy than sometimes, like that Latin one we were talking about. It's a bit more authentically jazz in the sense that we're trying to do. It's what maybe if the great players we love from the 50s and 60s were around, maybe that's what they'd be doing. In the sense that they wouldn't be trying to play the music of the 20s and 30s.
No, sure. I mean, no, of course, yeah, no, that's true.
So.
I mean, I'm just not sure how alternative, you know, it's sort of best alternative jazz album. But for me...
Alternative to jazz is folk, isn't it?
but for me, this kind of, there's, this has almost become I don't know, this has become such a sort of common style within jazz now, this kind of, I don't know, you call it kind of jazz with hip-hop and a bit of R&B. And I mean, you know, Robert Glasper was doing it back in the sort of early 2000s, you know, and even before him, you know, other musicians were doing it. So I mean,
things like Tutu by Miles Davis. Amandala, those sorts of albums with Marcus Miller.
Yeah, and so I don't know, that was my only, I sort of listened to it, and, you know, it's good playing, and he's obviously a really good drummer, but I just sort of found it a little bit like, I've just heard a lot of this stuff,
It's supposed to be the best stuff from that year period, and maybe it is the best
maybe
stuff from that.
Maybe it was the best.
I mean, I can't judge that because I don't listen to that style. But maybe there's someone out there who was thinking they were hard done by because their album's more interesting and within that broad style of hip-hop meets jazz meets soul and funk.
I mean, I don't really listen to that. I mean, I sort of very occasionally listen to that stuff. So I'm not really, maybe like you say, maybe that was the best of that kind of genre. But I listened to it and thought, I've heard this loads of times. I've heard this
style.
This style loads and loads of times. I couldn't really hear anything particularly original or alternative about it.
But, no. But then, it's a tricky one. I mean, I didn't listen to all of it, but I did enjoy it more than the Southern Nights album.
Okay, yeah.
I might listen to some of that again. Don't get me wrong, I don't have a downer on that pianist. Mm. It's just didn't do it for me, and the Nate Smith didn't do it for you, which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, there are opinions. We should have a little talk about what the Grammys are. And they are similar to, say, BAFTA, aren't they? It's an academy. So, or the Ivor Novellos. So these are voted things within a group of voters. And they would have been given a shortlist to listen to, and they will have made their choices from that shortlist. So we have to think about what politics are involved in that, getting to the shortlist. And, you know, there might be an album that's not on the shortlist that was better than anything that came out. Although I would find it hard to think there's a better album than the Samara Joy one. But, you know, there might be some that are touching that. And sometimes you get these weird things where maybe that category was chock full of amazing stuff and you can only choose one. And the Nate Smith category, Nate Smith was the clear runner, clear head and shoulders above everything else. But I don't know who the other nominees were in those categories. I didn't check that.
No, I didn't really,
which we probably should have done. But you know, maybe, I don't know if the Erza Collective were in there with the Nate Smith thing, those sorts of people who do broadly similar
stuff. I didn't really look, to be honest.
I know from the film side of things that those sorts of, there are PR groups, there are lobbying group, you know, people, publishers, who are the people who benefit from all this. They will push people. They will, they're not trying to influence votes, but they're just in the same way as any political system. They're trying to make their point. This is why we think you should vote for this person. You can ignore us if you like, but these are and that does have influence. Now, I'm not saying it's a crooked system. It is the system that is chosen. And there's multiple thousands of members who, you know, it's not a small, it's not 150 people.
No, sure.
It's not a panel either, although the shortlist might be a panel, shortlisting process. But so it's the same with books, isn't it? You know, you get publishers who push authors because they're new and launching, and maybe another author who's a bit better but has got two books out already, doesn't get onto a list sometimes. That might happen. But, you know, certainly in the jazz category, that's probably the least. It's the pop area that they're really pushing for because that's what makes them the big bucks. Yes, well, I mean, I've run out of things to say.
There was only one. There was the best jazz performance.
Oh, right, yes, the Chick Corea thing.
It was basically just Chick Corea, which I kind of figured was a, It's an actual performance of one track, wasn't it? Yeah. I think Windows from. So it's from the album Trilogy 3, again with the ubiquitous Christian McBride and Brian Blade. And this was a trio that he had sort of towards the end of his life, Chick Corea. And
did he die last year or was it the year before?
Can't remember.
I think he must have died. It must have been released in that period, that album.
Yeah.
So he must have died either in that period or just before that period.
I thought it was before that, yeah. But I think it was definitely... But I'm not sure if it was like an earlier... Well, it was obviously an earlier album from that had been recorded and then released later, if you know what I mean, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, that seemed fitting considering... Mm. His recent demise.
And again, I suppose it's a brilliant performance. I mean that band, it's interesting, that band, really, because he sort of in a way went back to his kind of roots a bit, that band, you know, after having done obviously all the fusion stuff, you know, the electric band, and then Return to Forever and all those, you know, but he really got back to playing trio jazz basically with this group.
I mean, he did that occasionally.
He did.
I like that Miroslav Vitius.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's on the drums? Was it Roy Haynes on drums? On that?
Yeah, on that's Now He Sings, Now He Sobs. Is that the one?
I'm thinking of the Monk Tunes one.
Okay.
Where one side is Thelonious Monk Tunes and the other side is Free Improvisation.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah.
I can't remember who.
Well, that was the same trio, wasn't it? Because that's the trio from Now He Sings, Now He Sobs, basically. Was it
Billy Higgins?
I think it was Billy Higgins.
Yeah.
No, I think it was Roy Haynes. I think it was Roy Haynes.
Was it Roy Haynes?
I think it was Roy Haynes.
Maybe it's Roy Haynes. Yeah.
But
So he did do that a bit.
Yeah.
Although.
But I think with this band particularly, it was a regular band, and they toured, and you know, it wasn't just kind of put together for.
No, it wasn't a come turn up at the studio and do some stuff.
And of course, Chick Corea is kind of.
A huge figure.
I know people have different opinions about Chick Corea, but he was a huge influence on the course of jazz piano. I think that's undeniable. Really,
that period was dominated by him and Herbie Hancock, really,
and McCoy Tyner.
McCoy Tyner.
Those three really are kind of, in a way, they really did define that kind of modern jazz
sound
really. Yeah. He's a huge figure. So yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody would begrudge him getting the Grammy for best jazz performance.
No, I mean, it would be interesting to see what turns up next year. We should do it again. This assessment.
But I think what I found really heartening was really how many great musicians there are. And I mean, it seems like the jazz scene is kind of thriving in a way, you know, with people like Samara Joy and, you know, Selima Faulkner, who, you know, there seems to be this, you know, at the moment, you know, a real kind of, you know, yeah, just...
Well, it's a cycle, isn't it? I think there's a resurgence of interest in jazz again. Mm. And I've experienced two of those in my lifetime. This is the third.
Third wave.
You know, the 80s...
His jazz
revival that launched people like Here, Courtney Pine, Andy Shepherd, those sorts of people.
Yeah.
I mean, they were already playing, they were already doing their thing. It was more like the alignment of various things.
Yeah.
And it's harder now because they were record label. That was all record label stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's, you know, that with the internet, most jazz albums are released, probably the majority of jazz albums are released by people like you and me, playing stuff to Bandcamp, and there's a whole load of stuff out there like that. But yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think with the exception that, you know, we don't know who else was on the lists. That's our bad. But with the one exception of the Royal Academy Band, because we know the people, the quality there in general is very high, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
And and also it's not, it's relevant to the past and the future, and it's a mixture. So those, in each of those albums, there are versions of tunes done in a jazz way.
Yeah.
That when someone says what is jazz, you could take that Diane Reeves version of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow as that's what jazz is, because everyone knows what the tune started as. And I think sometimes when you hear sort of classic jazz, it's like, well, that was just what it was. Mm. And it's like people wrote tunes like that. Well, actually, all of these things are interpretations. Mm. And we saw with the Stella by Starlight that jazz people chose not to play that B diminished chord at the B flat diminished chord at the beginning because, which makes more sense harmonically. Because why would you start a tune on the tritone? The first chord is a tritone away from the from the root being a minor 2-5. It's like, well, yeah, because it works with the tune. And I mean, I actually substitute, you know, the nearness of you, because that I always find that first chord a bit long. So I now do.
Oh, okay, you do the.
If we're starting in C, I would do the same 2-5 as is in Stella, E.
Okay, right.
To the C minor, because it fits. Just to, if you're doing it slow, just to make the harmony a bit more moving, you know, a bit more movement in the harmony, not emotionally. Anyway. Yeah, so that's our roundup of the Grammys 2026 awards, which we should say again is from August 2024 to August 2025 period. That's the window. So the new window started in August last year, and we'll finish in August this year, and then presumably February next year will be. The results.
So there's still time, Simon, to get.
There's still time to get on the list.
The list.
Yeah. Definitely. With my tribute to George Formby and George Foreman. So a bit of boxing and a bit of ukulele.
Because it sounds like a winner.
Banjolele, in fact, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a banjolele. Yeah.
Banjolele and boxing go together. Alliterative. We're on it. Right. Well, that's it for now, and keep listening to our regular fortnightly 5-minute podcasts. This is Simon Whiteside. Goodbye.
This is Nick Tomlin saying goodbye.